From beach towels to tea towels, and from mugs to water bottles, the TNT Shop has it all. Browse our shop now at tntradio.live.
Politically incorrect.
Incorrect. This is Politically Incorrect with Mike Tennessee and Richard Carson on TNT Radio.
And good morning and good afternoon and good evening to everybody, wherever you may be. This, believe it or not, is Mike Tennessee. I'm back from the high seas. I wasn't lost after all. And I'm with my very dear friend who's done some great work in the last couple of weeks, Richard Carson. Great to see you, Richard.
How are you, Mike? I'm good to see you return from the wilds. That's always a good thing.
Well, I didn't get bitten by a mosquito that made me sick, let me put it that way.
Excellent.
Now, we've got some great guests on our show today, and we don't have a lot of time,
so but
the first special person we have, of course, is Karen Benn. We've had her on this program before. She's spoken on radio a lot, and so she should too, because she has a myriad of degrees in sociology and environmental science. I won't go through them all because people know who she is. They know how good she is. And I know that she was commissioned to make a submission to a Senate inquiry regarding the water quality in the Great Barrier Reef, about which she can speak a lot. And I know that we are cognizant of the fact that a lot of money has been sent effectively to saving the Great Barrier Reef, in the first place by Malcolm Turnbull. You've got a special question of Karen, haven't you, Richard?
I do, and welcome, Karen. I just note that the last time we spoke, which was a few months ago, you were on one day, and the following week Dr. Ridd was on, and miraculously 2 days after both of you had had a week apart discussing the Great Barrier Reef, the ABC and others suddenly discovered it was in rude good health, which came as no surprise to you, but it obviously came as a hell of a surprise to the idiots that pay no attention to the facts. But we've resolved, or at least at the moment, got the health of the reef on the correct side of the agenda. But what I was wanting to touch on with you, seeing as how you made a huge presentation to that Senate inquiry, I've read parts of it, and there's lots of points in there that tend to support 99% of what I've heard you say. But I'd love to have your take on where's the money gone, and why did that other buffhead from our erstwhile parliamentary leadership structure, Morrison, give another $1 billion in? I'm fascinated to know your side of where the money went from the Turnbull lot, but then why do we need more for something that doesn't need it at all? Over to you.
Well, it's actually supporting a massive factory, a factory of people working for institutions who are closely aligned with senior public servants. They're like an elite epistemic community, an elite knowledge community, and they think for us and they decide for us what's best for us. And they're on extremely high salaries with a great life, travelling around the world, doing presentations, the same one all the time, over and over. That's where all the money goes. And it goes to the same projects being done year after year after year.
Just a question of you. I've seen this document, the Reef Trust Partnership. What the hell is that all about? Is that shut down yet, or is it still rolling along?
Well, interestingly, I was contacted by a person today, whose name I won't mention, who stimulated me to have a quick look and update myself, because I finished my PhD in 2013. And then went to work, and doing other things with the International Water Centre. But I've had a quick squiz, and it just looks like the same thing rebranded, except just made a little bit more sophisticated. I've only been glancing at it this afternoon, so I'm not going to say I'm an expert on it, but it does look extremely familiar to all the other reef plans that have been trotted out since the first one was. You know, they start off, they're going to be for 6 years or 5 years or 10 years, and this one's for 2030 up to 2050 with this Reef Trust Partnership.
So this
report
is a new one?
Yeah. Well, yes.
Sorry.
I have to tell you,
rebranded.
Same characters. same characters, because so, I had a look at the list of who's on the committee and who's on the board. And the people on the committee, the so-called International Scientific Advisory Committee, who are all Australian, mostly at UQ and JCU, both those universities I've worked with, same characters, again. Probably a few more sophisticated people on the board, and I'd say that's because it's now so heavily entwined with the whole climate change agenda. The two are placed together, so they're very entwined together. And I was a water quality specialist who went up to Cairns to work for the EPA and used to liaise with all of those scientific bodies in Townsville and Cairns. So I know a bit about water quality, and I can tell you from what I'm looking at that their reports are based on models. They're not based on actual evidence. You know, I used to be part of my job at the EPA when I arrived was to bring the water quality monitoring program up to scratch, mostly because our water quality monitor didn't work properly all the time.
Karen, when was that? Was that 5 or 6 years ago?
I arrived there in 1998.
Oh, quite a while.
And I worked for them, for the EPA for over 7 years.
Right.
Did a couple of federal projects too with them, with the Douglas Shire Water Quality Improvement Plan, acted as the Sugar Industry Liaison Officer, a few other things, worked with Wet Tropics Management Authority. I seconded to them for 6 months. I got to know the various people at Great Barrier Reef Marine Park Authority. I knew that the water quality monitoring program data had holes in it because a lot of the times the machine didn't work. I had put in an order for another machine of the same kind so we could use the parts backwards and forwards and have at least one in operation all the time.
Right.
And I was kind of, the kibosh was put on it, so I thought, well, that was interesting. Yes, it was.
So they didn't want to actually find out the quality of the water at all?
Well, I'd only just joined the department. I'd come up from Victoria. I'd worked in both Sydney and Melbourne as a water quality expert, I'll call myself, according to what I'm called. It was the first time I'd come across, your support team back in Brisbane kind of having a giggle that even though I pulled at every stop and finally got the sign off from our regional manager to get this one water quality monitor from the Tasmania, like not that expensive. And they go, oh, ha, you didn't get it. I thought, that's interesting. I've never experienced that before. I don't think they've met anyone who tried so hard to get something up and running. There's a lot of talk about let's put it this way. There's a lot of rhetoric about how important it is and how much they care. But I would seriously challenge that because I think they care more about their own self-importance and their power. They've got a lot of power.
Yeah, on the very essence of their power and how many people are involved in this sort of background of all of these various components of this Reef Trust Partnership Agreement or whatever it is? Are there hundreds or thousands of them? Because this money...
There's less than 100 key characters in Australia, but there are hundreds when you look at the characters who help produce the publications and are part of the knowledge source, you know, part of the so-called trusted knowledge, because the knowledge is separated. There's the knowledge they want printed and the knowledge they don't want printed.
Stay on the knowledge that they don't want printed, because I've read a lot of what you submitted to that Senate inquiry. And there's an awful lot of information in there which actually says that everything that they're all doing or not doing is somewhat unrequired. You know, you touch on sediment, you touch on the nitrogen component of the water, you touch on the fact that the majority of the nitrogen doesn't come from offshore, it comes from the Pacific Ocean floor itself. On and on it goes. So by you being a pest and trying to explain all this, you are therefore persona non grata, I would suggest. But
I am.
We're all but then there's an awful lot of us paying tax for money going to something that's bloody unrequired. That's what worries me. And you're pointing it all out. And when you read your submission to that Senate inquiry and others and other papers that have been written, it's as plain as the nose on one's face that this money is going into a sinkhole that's not necessary.
No, but it's into people. Karen said before, Richard, it's there because people want to be paid. Doesn't matter if they're doing anything, does it, Karen?
Well, it does matter.
As long as they're being paid. I'll give you, I think I mentioned this example once before, so forgive me, but I think I told you that at least every second year, one of my colleagues contacts me and says, hey, there's this project going, because they know I'm an independent researcher now, there's this project going, Karen, you know, to go to find out what the farmers are doing and why they don't do what we ask them to. And I say, have you read my PhD? That's what my whole PhD is about. And they go, oh, no. And then they even have said to me, well, don't worry about that. It's really good money. We need someone like you on the team. Come and do it again.
but isn't this a very sad reflection on the integrity of an awful lot of intelligent people that are just milking a system completely and utterly unfairly to the Australian taxpayer?
Yes.
But that's what I'm saying. The buck must stop at the top, shouldn't it?
Well,
shouldn't there somebody be in charge?
Well, there are some people at the top who are should be called culpable.
That's my point.
So Russell Reichelt runs the Great Barrier Reef and Marine Park Authority. If he doesn't know what is going on, then there's something terribly wrong because I'm sure he does. And he's somebody that should be investigated. I think there are people who should be investigated, like everybody on that board and everybody on that so-called International Scientific Committee, which is they're only international when they go abroad. They're all Australian.
Right.
It's a great big honeypot. And it keeps those people in, they're the elite now. They're famous. They love their life. And they justify themselves. But there are so many publications that are printed by others, not just in Australia, but around the world, who have refuted just about everything these people have said. Some very famous papers have been written by people who explain how not only does nitrogen not harm the reef, but the reef thrives on it because nitrogen is a building block of life. Every single living cell, every single amino acid has got nitrogen in it. And, 80% of our atmosphere is nitrogen, but it's not readily available. It has to be struck by lightning, dissolved in the water, the rain. You know, if you've ever watched your lawn after rain from the sky compared to watering it,
much
better. You really see that. Yeah, it's really green and grows fast. It looks great. So nitrogen is actually a scarce product for life on Earth because everything on Earth needs nitrogen. So it's not a toxin. It's not a bad thing. It's been turned into a demon. The research done on One Tree Island up near Port Douglas, that was a four-year project. It started off being two, but they had no bad results. So they doubled all the extra nitrogen in situ in the research. And still, the coral was happy.
Happy coral. Maybe we should get coral. Russell Reichelt on the program.
He might come on.
That would be quite a challenge. And you might want to get someone like Sheridan Morris on the program too. And
there's a few other characters. At the same time. See if Russell wants to answer some questions.
Well, I don't know. I think they'd be so busy trying to bring me down as a human being rather than my work.
on this program, Karen.
Karen, we're not into bringing people down. What we want is decency and honesty, which is a very scarce commodity in the Australian media structure. So that's our bent. The other yes. side of that is I noted your comment somewhere I was reading how horrendously censored Australia is. Well, what we're talking about here is a lot of money going into a couple of university structures and being dissipated without really any rationale behind it. Am I right in that assessment, or am I wrong?
Well, no. And if you look at who's on those, the key figures in those universities, they've got Australian orders. They're in the club. These are people who are close to the senior public servants and the technocrats, the bureaucrats. There's a kind of a club where knowledge is flowing between those people at in an upper echelon, you know, the ones in ivory towers, and they don't meet. They don't even mix with ordinary folk, you know. They don't. Their kids go to the same schools. They mix together. They're all friends. They're nice people. You know, these are not demons. Right. It's just that they don't see, or they don't care. They're too far removed from the day they joined, whatever. You know, when you're young and you're full of enthusiasm about learning and trying to do something right, and then you get drawn into the system.
Well, there's a bit of
That's what I think happened. I don't know why I never got drawn into the system. I think my parents must have done a really good job on me. But I have to leave systems that are corrupt. But it happens, and it's subtle. And some people don't. Some people might not know they're drawn in, and they believe they're doing the right thing. But the senior people, they are producing. One of the people I was mentored by for my my PhD, very, very knowledgeable man, a very nice person. But he once said to me, and this is kind of an example of erring on, you know, trying to sort of not make them all evil, is he said, I can now write a paper in 20 minutes and be able to get it published. He knows the system. It's the same. He's basically saying the same thing, but saying it slightly differently for each journal. And that's how they get their points, you know, for publications. And then they get on the international
a board or a body conference. Or something.
Yes, the conferences. They go to the international conferences. Mm-hmm. So then if you look at that level, see, just bear in mind, that plugs in. These people go and mix in international conferences and become friends with people at an even higher power level in the United Nations. And are we getting the picture here?
Yeah. Karen, speaking of interesting pictures, a little time ago, you mentioned the fact that information that was gathered was disseminated at the whim of somebody. In other words, some information is published or let out, as it were, and other information is not. It's a bit like drafting cattle, isn't it? Who does the actual drafting?
The people who are on the publications committee for each of the journals. And some journals have higher merits. So there are some journals that have a very high merit. It's a hierarchical system. And if you can get published in one of those journals, you can dance around the faculty at your uni loudly singing your own song because you're a star now. And you're
so what does getting published actually achieve? Obviously, if you're saying something which the committee, let's call them the publishing committee,
All agree with.
What makes it correct? What makes it?
Only that it gets the imprimatur of somebody on that editorial committee who's elevated because they're on the editorial committee, and they would have published papers before. It's a bit like it's like any system. Someone works their way up the ladder through the following the club rules, and you don't step outside. It's not that different to the Australian Medical Association. If you're
my question comes down to this: if you're being vetted, if for want of a better word, drafted, if your material is drafted out the wrong gate and not going to be published, what if it's all truth and
you're right and they're wrong
stuff? What if the stuff that they're publishing is not good stuff and it's wrong? How do these people become the people to give the imprimatur to what's right and what's wrong? Do they have to know what you've put up there to be published, what it means, don't they?
Well, I'll give you an example of one of Peter Ridd's papers. He's not the primary author. One of his students was. Peter Ridd has written the most important paper about the reef. He could not get published in any of the major reef or coral journals. They just wouldn't publish it.
No, but there was a lot of coercion against him, wasn't there? A lot of people up in the drafting quarters, they were told he was a ratbag. Is that right?
Well, that's what they... You go to uni, they tell you the 100 arguments you should never use. One of them is called ad hominem. Never attack the person. Only stick to their work. They attacked Peter as a person.
Yeah.
You know, and his work is as tight as a fish's proverbial.
Bottom.
Yes. And he did get published, but not in one of the star journals. And, like, for example, when I was doing my PhD, you can be steered by your supervisors to read things from only certain journals and not read other journals.
Yeah.
That's how it's being steered like sheep towards the great highway of fame.
Or, Karen, speaking of fishes' bottoms, how are the species going up there on the reef? Are the species dying out or are they increasing in numbers?
No, look, the species, I haven't had dived there recently, but when I used to dive the reef for years, I was lucky. I had a partner, had a boat. We used to sail, nearly every second weekend. And
bail the boat or bail up to go boating?
Well, even when I went with parkies, like I used to do volunteer work. Even when I was working for the EPA, I'd do volunteer work with Parks and Wildlife because it was fun, bird counts and seagrass counts or whatever. And I'd be with one of the parkies in camp out and they'd show you the part where the reef was damaged, and that's where people were arriving onto an island, say, and leaving. So it was covered in sand. And then we hop in a Zodiac. We go out about 10, 20 metres, and everything's perfect and pristine because nobody's been kicking sand all over it. So when I was diving, it was fine. The reef is totally replenishing itself all the time. And you've just got to bear in mind, it's one of the earliest life forms on Earth. It's been going boomers through shockingly horrific, hard geological times and exploding volcanic times, changes in the day length, changes in sea rise, all sorts of things have happened over the history of the development of planet Earth, and it's still with us. It's highly adaptable.
Not to mention the effects of the odd cyclone.
Yeah. Well, I'm only one of many who used to photograph the coral after the cyclone damage and then come back and photograph it next year and the following year. And sometimes you'd come back in 1 year and you couldn't see where was the damage bit? Where is it?
And Karen, the very essence of what you're saying here and what Mike's tugging out of you is there's an awful lot of sense and sensibility. But my query was originally, why do they want all this money? And they're not using it at all other than to protect their own wonderful chairs and positions in life. But the taxpayer, and I don't know whether that $1 billion that Morrison promised 18 months ago or something or other, whether that's going to flow into the coffers or just $100 million Turnbull gave them a few weeks ago. Are they going to get another $100 million a year to waste on something that's not required? That's the point I'm trying to, buddy, come into, and who the hell are these people stealing it all? And you've said there's about 100 of them.
Well, there's about 100 of them, but think about where it goes. So it trickles down to every employee in Great Barrier Reef Marine Park Authority, every employee in the Australian Centre for Fresh Water, Australian Centre for tropical freshwater. Oh, January, I've just gone out of my mind. AIMS, the Australian Institute of Marine Science, every university that does a project on this. So every master's student, every PhD, every on-the-ground project, volunteers, you know, they bring in volunteers, they get donations. People donate as well as pay taxes towards this. It's a machine. It is a massive, massive machine. Every single boat that takes people out to the reef has to pay a reef tax. Every fisherman has to pay a reef tax. It just goes on and on and on. So there, it's probably employing right down to the cleaning lady and all the way up to all the conferences, all the super, super duper meetings that the elite go to internationally to sit around and have a really good time. And
the embroidery on the uniforms.
It's power.
Now, Karen, maybe the Defence Department.
We're on our half-hour block. We could have gone on.
Oh, okay. Yep.
No, that's all right. We knew you'd run us through very quickly. You've given us a bit of food for thought. We'll have to get you back to expand on it, I think. And thank you for stopping in your busy life to come on to Politically Incorrect for half an hour. We do appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you, Karen.
Thank you, Karen.
Jesse Zerowell on TNT Radio.
Apparently, Nancy Pelosi's husband was attacked by a home intruder, attacked with a hammer, which I don't wish any harm on anybody, but my first thought upon encountering this news was how convenient that this happens right before the midterm election when things are, to put it mildly, not looking good for the Democrats, and this plays right into their narrative about homegrown terrorism, domestic violent extremists, as the government has put it, MAGA Republicans, as the government has put it, these boogeymen we're all supposed to be afraid of, these existential threats to democracy. How convenient that this attack happens at this time and plays right into that narrative. Maybe there's no connection, I don't know, but I would be surprised if there was no orchestration behind this.
Jesse Zerowell on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
The story behind the biggest election takeover in history.
We're only now being able to finally confirm exactly how this worked.
Mark Zuckerberg and his wife are donating more money to local governments ahead of the election. $100 million on top of a $300 million gift.
The most money any individual has ever spent to win a presidential campaign in the history of our country.
The election was bought way before Election Day.
They stole it fair and square. They changed the voting rules in the middle of the game.
A nation divided, rigged.
It was a rigged election. People have to find out what happened.
At SalemNow.com.
When the whole world seems turned upside down, we sort through it together, lighting the fuse for freedom. TNT Radio.
And here we are again on Politically Incorrect. I'm Mike Tennessee with my dear old friend, Richard Carson.
Old being relevant.
Of course.
Of course.
We have a very special guest now for the last half hour of our show, Richard. Her name is Nicola Charles, who may be best known for her role as Sarah Beaumont in the long-running series Neighbours, on and off between 1995 and 2016. Nicola had obviously trained as an actress, but she's also trained as a dancer in the UK, and she started her career in British television commercials, having been chosen as the face of the launch of Coca-Cola's new flagship brand, Sprite. And a sprightly lady she is too, because she was also voted by readers of FHM to be the second sexiest woman in the world. Can you believe that? I think I can. Our listeners will just have to take my word for it if they didn't already know. She's also penned some novels and recorded an album called Listening in Colour, but we haven't probably got enough time to go into all that. She's the CEO and sole owner of Shield Maiden Publishing. Welcome to the program, Nicola. I know you've been a regular guest on Rick Munn's show, Locked and Loaded, on TNT Radio. And this afternoon, you've got the pleasure of being with Richard and I on Politically Correct. And I know that there are a couple of things that you want to talk about, and Richard's got some interesting questions for you.
So if I may just kick the ball down the road to start it off, Nicola, I was chatting with a gentleman last Saturday from Canada, a gentleman by the name of William Kay, and we were just talking about all sorts of things which I don't like, and I'm of a mind that you're of a similar mind for the, I'm going to use the word, the population walking around half asleep, while our erstwhile authoritative governments are looking at ways of imposing things such as digital identity, reducing the independence of the public. So we're going to let you, in your own way, get stuck into all of these things. So digital identity, what's your take on that? I think it's appalling, but I'd like to hear your style of it.
Well, hi, guys, and I do feel a little bit like I'm being unfaithful to Rick. So Rick is like my TNT radio husband, and you guys are like my lucid, illicit affairs.
Don't worry.
I'll go along with that.
You're safe with us.
apologies, Rick, if you're listening. I've actually been debating this in my own head. Are people asleep or are they... I guess it's the same thing. I think it's more that they're psyops, because they're functioning normally in life, and they're running businesses. They went and got their injections, and most of my friends have done all this stuff. And it's not really that they're asleep. They feel as if they are sort of getting their information from the correct sources, but of course we know that they're not. So it's really important that you share TNT Radio. It's really important that you share information from all of the credible news sources that aren't owned by this giant industrial, what we now know is also a military complex, thanks to these bioweapons. It was interesting today because this horrible, horrible piece in, of course, the Daily Mail popped up about if someone is lying on the floor and they're in terrible need and in distress and they're dying and they need aid, should you help them if they're a meat eater? And I thought, oh, here we go again, because what's happened when you look at it broadly is we've had black versus white. They did quite well with that one. If you think about the 2020 election and how America sort of imploded, and that was all by design, and they sat back. I believe George Soros delivered the bricks to the corners of the road and off they went. Then we had gay versus straight. Apparently we were all homophobic, despite the fact that we were massive fans of the band Queen, massive fans of the Pet Shop Boys, massive fans of George Michael. We hailed all of these people through the 70s and 80s culture club. I didn't see any homophobia myself. I felt I lived in a very tolerant, wonderful world. So they tried that one and that worked for a while, and they managed to get some of the gay community to line up for their monkeypox jabs. So I find that very offensive. And then, of course, the big one that we've just had, which is the vaxxed versus the unvaxxed. And if I hadn't been alive and seen this with my own eyes, I don't think I would have thought it was possible. But there we have it. It is. And now they're saying we should have all these amnesties after they lost us our jobs. I lost my radio job. My partner lost his job as a tri-state manager for a construction company. We couldn't go out. We couldn't swim in the local pool when it was hot. Our family didn't want to know us. And a longtime friend of ours said, I hope you both die. And so I thought it was a bit like that moment in the movie Titanic where they, and actually, strangely, this character was played by my first husband, but it was a bit like that moment, a bit like that moment where they sort of shot Tommy Ryan to get into the lifeboat. And it's that moment where you realize, holy crap, human beings will do absolutely anything to save their own skins. And so those of us who didn't fall along with this narrative, and those of us who tried to delve deeper and understood it was financial and it was because of this fiat banking structure and we were going into digital identities, it's been absolutely devastating for us emotionally and intellectually to have to, I don't know, it's like having children, having to sort of coax them to see the problem. So now we've had the vax and the unvax, and now the new one by the CIA, the new one, the new divide and conquer. First, it was Julius Caesar. Now it's the CIA. The new one is vegans and vegetarians versus meat eaters.
And they have the hide to call fake burgers meat burgers, but it's not real meat.
Yeah.
How do they get away with that?
Honestly, they're getting away with everything, aren't they? They're getting away with it because we believed the initial giant lie. And I talked about this yesterday in a quick clip. Honestly, I have a real job now. I have a job where I work from home and I sit on the phone and sell lots of things, and I'm quite successful at it. And as it turns out, they've done me a good turn with their pandemic rubbish because I'm earning more money than I was before. But I'm sure I'm in the minority, I'll be honest with you, because I've got a few ticked off friends in other industries, including the police. So they psyoped us with this giant lie, and I was suspicious about it because I lived in the countryside and I could see this sort of happening under the cover of darkness at night. Is the whole lockdown thing was so they could roll out these nasty 5G towers and all of their surveillance equipment, which seems to have just popped up, doesn't it? We didn't see the workmen, we didn't hear the nails going in and the drills, but suddenly there's enormous amounts of surveillance equipment on every road junction, on every traffic light. They're even knocking down mature trees in Melbourne, beautiful mature trees that have been there hundreds of years, because we wouldn't want to not be able to get that surveillance pole in.
Nicola, that's a very, very good point. Do you know there was a young lady who was caught on camera at the Gold Coast recently, who was fined over $1,000 because the camera caught her phone, which happened to be tucked into her brassiere. She wasn't using it. That is the phone, I mean.
Yeah.
just stop on that point, if you don't mind, Mike. So the person had her mobile phone tucked in under her blouse or something or other. Mm. That became an illegal thing to do?
Yes, because it was on her person.
Yeah, well,
right.
I know that's police speak, isn't it? But it was on her person. So under the legislation, I haven't looked at it. I don't know anything about the law. So I didn't look into it, but I gather, yes, she's complaining about it.
There was a photographic apparatus where she was driving.
Mm. Oh, yeah. Yes, they're everywhere. They're all over.
Nicola, just explain that to me.
Catch the Premier of Queensland, you know, Miss Anastasia Palaszczuk. Catch her all the time. Her photo's everywhere.
Oh, that's important. Nicola, you said that a lot of that stuff was happening at night. Are you based in Melbourne? Are you out of town?
I'm in the south. I'm semi-rural. I'm rural, right. Really. But okay. I lived in the mountains, and it's quite extraordinary in the mountains. It's so beautiful, and it's forestry essentially, and protected. I believe protected. That's why I moved there. And we don't just have these horrid, enormous 5G monstrosities plonked on the top of every sort of hill and mountain. We have two now, and they're next to each other. And I find it really concerning. And I saw some strange things next to one of these 5G towers the other day. And I thought to myself, you know, all of this surveillance, all of us getting us to jump from one foot to the other. Oh, my God, I was using my phone. Oh, my God, you know, take your registration number and there's your carbon credits, because they've done this thing in the UK in Oxford and Gloucester where they're going to do this thing. They're proposing it. If you leave your district, they're calling it. We're no longer in suburbs or counties. But if you leave your district more than 70 times in a year, you'll get fines. And, you know, how dare you roam around the country in which you live and you're a citizen. But I just still think all of this, of course, there is that sidebar of being able to generate more revenue and spy on us and make criminals of innocent people, essentially. But all of this, I do believe, is just a massive distraction tool because they just don't want us focusing on the financial stuff that's going on.
Yeah, well, that's the one I'm coming to, the digitization of currencies and then moving your money or something or other away from you to their control.
Yeah.
We can start on that and we'll have a bit of a break in a couple of minutes. But do you want to start on what you're... We'll break in a few minutes. Where you go?
It's an important one because, the wind blows where I am. It doesn't even need to rain. There's a slight breeze, no force 9 gale, and the lights go out. There's a power cut and we all have to go and buy candles. And I remember I went to my local store to buy candles the last time it happened. And the lovely store owner said to me, "We've been thrown back into the dark ages. My FPOS doesn't work. If you want candles, you can only use cash. And you already have to have that cash because the ATM isn't working either." So, imagine if we go into digital currency and there is no cash and the lights go out, as we know they're going to, because conveniently we also have energy crisis at the same time. How on earth will the world operate? And I said on Rick's show the other day, in the future, it'll be like Mad Max and we won't be running around with guns and knives. We'll be running around with pairs of scissors trying to cut wires to stop this digital world.
Well, I'll join you on that particular crusade, I can assure you. Because I don't have the slightest interest in it. But a gentleman was on the other day and he made the point when the fires happened on the southeast coast of New South Wales, people had to have cash because, again, the same thing happened. No technical support to take a transaction.
Yeah. So,
if there's no real power and there's no sunshine for a while, again, we'll have no power to run the ATMs.
That's right.
Better stock up on cash now. We've got to go to a break, I think, which is very unfortunate but very important for the radio station. So we'll come back very shortly, Nicola. Don't you go anywhere, will you?
Give me a minute with TNT Radio's Steve Malzberg.
So just how dishonest and biased is the U.S. media, the mainstream leftist media who are in the pocket of the radical left? I'll report and you decide, or in this case, I'll report what Nicholas Fondacaro over at Newsbusters has found. He and the folks at the Media Research Center compared the coverage of the recent attack on Nancy Pelosi's husband with the coverage of the assassination attempt on conservative U.S. Supreme Court Justice Brett Kavanaugh back in June, and the results speak volumes. Coverage during the first 5 days of the Pelosi attack was 11 times larger than the amount of coverage given to the Kavanaugh story on the major broadcast networks, ABC, CBS, and NBC. 166 minutes and 16 seconds of coverage given to the Pelosi attack in the first 5 days, and a total of just 15 minutes and 1 second of airtime for the Kavanaugh story back in June. There is only one explanation for this, and it's spelled B-I-A-S. Thanks for giving me a minute. I'm Steve Malzberg for TNT Radio.
Hi, my name is Marnie Dobek. I'm a family physician, and my son Zachary almost died of sepsis last year. We were lucky. Most people don't know the word sepsis, and they don't know the symptoms. Protect yourself and your loved ones. Know sepsis. To learn more about the symptoms, please go to sepsis.org.
The truth is out there. All the other stations suck.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
And here we are again on Politically Incorrect with Nicola Charles. Those of you who remember her on that long-running fantastic show called Neighbours, you can believe it, she's changed from Sarah, haven't you, Nicola?
Now, before the break,
Richard had got you going on some really good, interesting stuff about digitalisation and what it's going to do to us in the future. I'll bet you the theme and the stories in Neighbours might have been a bit different if all this was around in those days.
Yeah, well, actually, that's a really interesting point that you bring up, because Neighbours has ended. They've taken it off air, and they are also busy destroying the UK soaps as well, because they cannot have, and I realise now that I was actually part of a giant distraction tool as well. Let's get into these soaps and get into these characters. Let's get into Sarah Beaumont and Kat Slater and not focus on what they're doing with the money. But they can't have those shows on anymore, because you would have to represent real life, and real life would be, oh, gee, I'll meet you down at the coffee shop, but you'll have to pay because my programmable currency won't let me, because I posted on Facebook that I didn't like Dan Andrews. I will start the programmable currency, even though I have a great paying job. I'm pretty sure that when the digital numbers go into my bank account, I'll be at minus 2 million.
Well, that's happened in recent times too. Not just in James Bond films either. People got a mistake made in their bank account and then went and spent about $10 million, which nice. They couldn't possibly have known they didn't really have before they found a mistake in their bank account.
Well,
it's never gonna work that way, is it, though? It's never going to work that way.
But they'll want to get it back. Just touching on the... probably I use the word sleepwalking around and not understanding. A gentleman in America, Thomas Harrington, wrote an interesting thesis or commentary on the public at large, and he called it the shame of the Covidians, which is the public at large not wanting to have anything to do with the fact that they've all been conned. They don't want to sort of say, heaven forbid, I've been taken down here. It's those other buggers that are at fault, but not the majority of us who've been jabbed and brainwashed to a degree. Now, that has to be broken down, but at the same time, the authoritative structure is busy trying to lock us all up with this other nonsense, which you're talking, the stuff that you're seeing and wanting to talk about.
Well, look, if any of them had survived, it would have been difficult. If we could speak to them now, it would have been difficult for the victims of the Jonestown massacre cult slaying to also admit that we were conned, we were fooled, and, you know, we helped kill our own children in this sort of mass suicide where I guess they all thought they were going to meet God. And I see this COVID cult as very, very similar. You know, I had friends that refused to get any other product because they wanted to wait for Pfizer because they thought Pfizer was great. And I said to them, do you realize they've had the biggest criminal fine in history? And that's of any company in any industry. And they weren't interested. And so they had been completely brainwashed. And they have no idea that, you know, I think it was in The Spectator today or yesterday that, you know, real doctors and scientists are analyzing what's in some of these injections. And if what they found is going to be applied in the way it seems like it's going to be, then what's going to happen is some dystopian future that I heard Yuval Harari talk about, where they want you to be stood next to someone in a supermarket or sat next to someone in a restaurant and know that that person next to you is heavily in debt. So you make that decision. Do I speak to them? Do I deal with them? I guess, does the wait staff treat them differently? And it's just such a horrific vision of the future. It's such a loss of privacy. In Australia, it's if the Privacy Act of 1988 has been completely thrown up and flushed down the toilet. But it does answer one very, very important question when we're trying to put these pieces together, is why is Bill Gates involved in healthcare? Well, if some of these chipsets and nano things that are building structures inside the human body are pre-programmed, then that explains why Bill Gates, the computer guy, is involved in global healthcare.
Yeah, that's part of what's inside a lot of the Pfizer and AstraZeneca injections. And I've read enough about it, and people think I'm mad, which is probably also correct. But, you know, there's graphene and there's other componentry in there. That Harari fellow would qualify as one of the worst individuals ever put on earth. I think he may be, he could be number one, but there's a lot of his mates aren't far behind him. But if the whole of the Australian population just had the good fortune to listen to Harari for 15 minutes, they'd be saying, hang on a minute, we don't want anything to do with any of this crap.
Yeah, but it's too late.
Well, I don't know that it is too late, but I think the point that you're trying to make, or I'm making with you, is that the public need to listen and hear. And they're not hearing it because the mainstream media choose to tell us nothing other than lies. That's a big problem. And takes people of your strength of character and courage to come on and highlight this rubbish that's being foisted around. But as I get through to, you know, one-on-one conversations, you can start to break people's, I didn't know that. And what are you going to do about it? Well, you've got to talk about it to your friends. And I talk to younger people that I come in contact with. And I say, look, no point me telling you. You've got to tell 10 or 20, 35 to 40-year-olds to wake up and have a look. And that's probably, I don't believe in giving up, because if we give up, then we've lost the war. And I don't want to do that, because this is too important for children and grandchildren. I see it as a really big issue. And I know I know Mike does as well. So it's imperative that we do carry on and shout and yell and kick. Kicking's allowed.
Yeah. I think Richard, maybe Nicola might be able to answer this question, but perhaps we should label everything that we want to tell people as breaking news, because that's what people listen to now. It's all breaking news. Nicola, you would have seen, I know you've been out of the country for quite a while, but you also spend a lot of time here. Have you noticed how the so-called news bulletins, nearly every story is breaking news?
Yeah. It's
I've
just
never heard the sound of it.
it's all part of the psyop, right? You make it exciting. If you make something exciting, it's like, oh, you know, it's like when you're waiting to get on the airplane a little bit and they say, oh, you know, seat rows A to F, and you think, oh, thank God, I can't wait to get out of this this boarding area and jump on the plane. And they were doing that basically with the jab. Oh, it's only for 60 plus. Now 50 plus can go. And it was like opening a Christmas present, and they managed to get people excited about it. But, you know, the only thing you need to look at if you need to prove to anyone that something's really not right here is that the TGA, the Therapeutic Goods Administration, said that that there were limitations and difficulties getting hold of ivermectin. We weren't even allowed to say it for a year. I believe I lost one of my Twitter accounts just for writing the word. And this is a medicine that can clearly save the lives of sick, taxpaying Australians, and the Australian authorities are denying it. Yeah. But what's really scary, though, is when you go down that rabbit hole as well, is who are we listening to? Because then you get to the point where you hear that organizations like APRA, oh, well, they're not a government body, they're a private organization. And you think, well then why are doctors listening to them? Why are we listening to these people? And this is how they wash their hands, because, recently they sold Vic Roads. And on Friday, I did a big thing for my social media, because Vic Roads contacted me in an email. I have it written down, and said that they're going to create a digital ID driver's license for me because I've been a victim of the Optus hack. I wasn't quite joining the dots there. And that they were going to send me my new digital ID via email, which would go straight to my Optus phone. And so I sent them a scathing email communication and said that if it's okay with you, I'm going to decline your digital driver's license, because for me, the hard copy license that I carry on my person at all times is probably less likely to get hacked.
Correct. The desire for the public at large are all about the sacrosanct nature of their private information, but merely by going onto A, computers, and B, Facebook, and everywhere else, you're downloading your life for the world to see anyway. So I don't know. I have to say, I don't touch any of it. Don't do it. But that's separate matter, because, no, I can't do it. I'm that incompetent. I can launch a rocket. I can launch a rocket from NASA by turning on the computer, so at least I don't.
What a great admission. I must write that down.
Well, you can take it down. But the stupidity of the whole process is that everyone wants their lives to be private while putting it all out into the ether anyway. I think there was something else I wanted to talk about. They've done digital currency. The point I was going to come up with also, Nicola, is all of this information that is being foisted upon the public at large, we've had a complete lack of any discussion at any point in the total agenda, which I would have said was a fairly necessary thing. That might be something you would like to go on.
Yeah. How do we get a referendum for Brexit, but we don't get a referendum on COVID measures? Or more importantly, let's say, okay, COVID was a health scare. Okay, whatever you think it was. But why do we not get a referendum on digital currency? Why do banks get to decide that they're going to give us a programmable currency that they can take fines from and
diminish the value of it? They can write the value of it down if they so choose.
And also they can choose where you can spend it. Those kinds of things are just, if you watched it in a movie 3 years ago, you'd think, goodness, you know, like what a horrible future. And here we are living through it. And they don't speak to the people. In the UK, we have, you know, Prime Minister's Question Time. You know, there were 60 Minutes here. You have town halls in America. And what they do now, they get ushered on by their handlers. And that's what they're called now, because they do as they're told, like children. And they say what they wanted to say. And then they either refuse to talk about anything else, either because they're intellectually incompetent, don't know the answers, or they're not allowed to. And like Dan Andrews a couple of days ago, when they were asking him about the accident with the young boy a few years ago, oh, you know, I think I've said everything I want to say on that. I've gone into that in detail, rah, rah, rah. And we don't get to hold these people to account. So for me, politics is now theater. There is no value in it. There is no democracy. It really doesn't matter who you vote for. The left and the right are the same side. And so, yeah, I'm really worried about where we are. We're not being spoken to, and it's supposed to be we the people.
Nicola, How do we get across that half the population are like my dear friend Richard? They don't know computers. They don't know how to do the digital world. So what do we do about all those people?
Wait till we're all gone.
They fall off the edge of a flat world.
Well, I'll probably starve to death.
Unfortunately.
Just tell them, you know what? Tell them you don't have a smartphone. I can't have your digital ID because I don't have a smartphone. I don't know how to use it. That's the end of that.
Right. Nicola, it's been terrific speaking with you. really, really good. And unfortunately, we're out of time, which is very unusual when Richard has a few questions to ask.
No. We appreciate you coming on at short notice and giving us a little bit of the background of what you see, because I think we all see something similar. So, Nicola, thank you for joining us.
You're welcome.